This Journey to a Dream podcast is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. Hi, and welcome to Journey to a Dream. Thank you so much for downloading this episode. And today we're going to speak to someone who is hopefully going to be on the start line for TT 2024, but it is by no means a given yet. Let's find out more.
My name is Ryan Garside. I'm a motorsport lecturer at Myerscough College in Preston, and I like racing motorbikes really fast.
Well, that's short and to the point. When did you first decide that you really liked racing motorbikes really fast, Ryan?
All I've ever known, really. So my dad raced bikes most of his life and all of my childhood. So I spent my life growing up in race paddocks, watching bikes going around the racetrack, watching my dad prepping bikes in the garage and what have you. And I spent most of my weekends on my push bike, flying around the paddock, making motorbike noises, pretending I was racing myself, and it's all I ever wanted to do. I used to queue up at Scrutineering with everyone else, with all the race bikes, with the leathers and whatnot. And I would queue up with my push bike next to them all, go through Scrutineering. I had Scrutineering stickers from World Superbike and Manx Grand Prix and all sorts on my push bike. It was ace.
You came over to the Isle of Man at quite an early age then?
Yeah, I came over in 1996. My dad did the Manx, and he didn't like it, actually. He did not like it. He terrified himself, but he was respectful about the fact that he knew how dangerous it was, and he didn't want to push himself too much. He didn't enjoy it, but I've always fancied it a little bit. I used to be quiet, so I wouldn't say against it as such, but I wasn't keen about doing the roads for years, because obviously there's the danger element of it. But there was something that John said in an interview, McGuinness said in an interview, about people are quite happy to go on the road, go at ridiculous speeds on the road bikes for, you know, up to the Buddy Wagon up in Cape and up near where we are, up to Devil's Bridge or whatnot. Said, what if I could tell you could go and do that? But we're going to close the roads and the police aren't going to bother you. There'll be no one coming the other way. You'd all be up for that, wouldn't you? And I was like, yeah, actually, you know what? It's right. It's just, if anything, it's safer than riding a road bike, which I was happy to do for years. So it changed my mindset towards it. And I thought, yeah, you know what? I fancy a bit of that, actually. It's something I fancy doing. It looked like good fun, basically. I want to go and enjoy myself.
Just tell us about your job. It sounds fascinating, certainly for somebody who's so into motorsport.
Yeah, so I work as a lecturer at Myerscough College in Preston. We teach motorsport, basically. So the qualification at the moment is a City and Guilds Light Vehicle Maintenance and Repair. So it's everything two-wheel, four-wheel, from servicing to MOT prep, repairs, fault diagnostics, etc. I never thought I'd see myself in a position with such responsibility as a teacher. I still wonder that myself, honestly. Me with the authority and responsibility doesn't sound great. I'm the most immature person you'll come across. I stumbled upon it by accident through an old friend, Ian Taylor, who I did a bit of racing with years ago, and stumbled across the job because he was working here at the time, and never looked back. Yeah, it's great. So I describe it to my friends and family. I basically talk rubbish about cars and bikes all day, fix cars and bikes all day, go racing on the weekends, and when I inevitably smash it to bits, the students fix it. It's great.
So for somebody who literally has grown up in this world, you are living and breathing it, and it is actually helping pay for your racing as well.
Yeah, it makes life much easier. You know, you're trying to go away on a weekend race, and I don't have to worry too much about, you know, prepping the bikes beforehand, because I can do it with the students in class. So we've got loads of bikes here that, you know, whether they're mine or whether they're colleges, that we've worked on and prepped from the ground up. So we're currently building two SV650s for Richie Harrison, who's another lecturer here. He's racing the No Limits Mini Twins Championship. Well, we're doing it in an evening after hours club, like an extracurricular club. And they've taken two very rough looking, sorry for themselves, freewheeled SV650s and, you know, stripped them right back down to bare frames, repainted stuff and built them up to look like proper race bikes. So the kids get a great, you know, sense of satisfaction out of seeing something coming in one state and leave the workshop in another state. And then they get the buzz of seeing it actually go around a track. So they come on events with us on a weekend. Obviously, we don't take a full group because, you know, you wouldn't want to take 10 or 20 kids away to an event. But, you know, we'll take three or four students to each event with us, and they are effectively junior technicians for the weekend. It's satisfying. You know, we've got loads of students who go on to do great things after they've been to us as well, especially in the four-wheel department. We've got countless students that go on to Formula One and World Rally. So there's every Formula One team on the grid has ex-Myerscough students in it, quite, you know, in quite high up spots as well. So we've had, in the past, where Lewis Hamilton's number one and number two technicians were both ex-Myerscough students. We've had just recently one of the recent students to leave us a couple of years ago, Emmy Jones. She's now going to be the first ever female mechanic working in, you know, as part of the pit crew in Formula One. She's Max Verstappen's number two mechanic working for Red Bull. We've got really close sort of relationship with M Sport, who are at the Ford World Rally team. They regularly come to us asking for past students, and we run like almost like an apprenticeship type program with them for some of the degree students. So yeah, we've got some really good connections. It's really good seeing them go out and, you know, get something from it, live their dream sort of thing. I'd love to travel the world, go doing, you know, I missed the boat on that there, but I'd love to travel the world with a Formula One team going, it'd be ace.
Well, hopefully what you're not going to do is miss the boat over here to the Isle of Man later this year. We'll get to that in a moment, Ryan. But first of all, you told us about this little boy who went round, followed his dad and took his little push bike and got all those stickers. At what point did you decide that you really wanted to do some competitive racing yourself? How did that happen?
Well, I always wanted to, when I was a youth. So when I was sort of like 12, 13 years old, I used to get really frustrated being in a paddock, watching other kids my own age racing RS125s in the super teens or whatever else they were doing. You know? And it was really frustrating that it was almost like they'd got this opportunity and I'm not. And they always asked my mum and dad if I could do it, and they won't let me because they didn't agree with the whole, you know, you get a lot of parents where their kids are racing and they don't really want it. It's the parents almost pushing it on their kids, and they didn't want to feel like they were doing that themselves. But it was very much a case of, well, when you can run it yourself, by all means do and we'll support it. And they did. So when I was 19, I think I'd have been at the time, my dad and his friend Mark Woodman were building some 400s, ZXR 400s in the garage. And I was always in there pestering and nosing and watching what they were doing and learning and helping out. And Mark just sort of threw in an offhand comment when they were building a second bike. We went, well, get your ACU license and you can race this. And I just looked at my dad and was like, right, that's it, we're having it. And he's like, well, go on then. He said, yeah, you can come working with me on the weekends. And rather than been paying me cash in hand, I'll pay for your license and your entries and stuff for your first year racing. So that's what we did. And yeah, I really did a bit there because I couldn't afford to do much of that. So it was a few years later, it was 2017, by the time I started doing a full season on my steel frame 600. And yeah, just never looked back from there, really. Just keep costing myself a fortune year in, year out.
And how did your dad feel about the roles being reversed, essentially?
He promised my mum he would never race against me because my mum, the nerves, she wouldn't be able to handle it. So he always said he'd never race with me because neither of us would give each other an inch, and it's not fair to do that to my mum, so we never did. He enjoyed it, but then he got to a point where he wanted less to do with the bike racing himself because he realised how much, in his words, wasted over the years. He seems to forget the good memories that he's had over the years and, you know, the love of doing it. At the time, it was what you wanted to do. But he spent a fortune doing it and decided he wanted to sort of stop and concentrate on building his retirement fund. I totally understand. But for me at the moment, I'm still making the memories. I want to, you know, achieve the things I want to achieve and live the dream as such. And I'll worry about being a grown up when I eventually grow up.
So it's interesting that. Do you ever give any thought, I suppose, to maybe what you might be wasting in terms of time and certainly money as well?
All the time. Oh yeah, all the time. But I don't see it as this thing. My dad sort of looks back at it as it feels like he wasted something he should have stopped earlier. I don't feel like I'm wasting it. At the end of the day, nobody's here forever. You know, and as horrible as life is sometimes, you could go in any moment's notice. I want to get the most out of my life whilst I'm here. So I'm not looking at it with a, you know, irresponsibly as such, but I want to just enjoy myself and I want to spend my money that I work for. I want to work hard and then go and enjoy. Take the benefits for it, reap the benefits of working hard and go out and enjoy it. And at the moment, bike racing is what I want to do. So, and the next sort of challenge is Isle of Man, something I never actually saw myself doing, but it's all getting a bit real now.
Just going back to when you sort of started, you talk about 2017, was it? And you had some really good success so far.
Yeah, I did all right. So I had a steel frame 600 Honda, the lovely little bikes, which it was my dad's bike. And he sort of said, you know, it was a spare bike. You can have it. Do what you want with it. It's yours. You just can't sell it. So I was like, right, no worries. So I did 2 years racing that at Aintree, working and doing what I can to pay the bills, and got a couple of little sponsors on board. Like, my uncle paid for some tyres for me, and that hell sorted us out with some brake lines, you know, just bits and bobs. Did 2 years at Aintree, won the steel frame and the pre-injection championships both years. So I won all four championships in 17 and 18. And then went to Thundersport as a bit of a step up. And that's where my first proper sponsor as such came on board. That was a fellow I met through working at Blackpool Honda at the time. He was called Ben Wildman. And he has a company called Easy Pay Network. And they make almost like, you know, the machines when you go into McDonald's that you do your touchscreen order. They make them in hospitals and stuff to do with like baby scan phones. He sponsored me, paid for my entries for the season for a year at Thundersport. So I thought, yeah, challenge myself to some new tracks, you know, going up down the country. I started working at my school the year before as well. So I had the support of, you know, using a van and facilities and taking students because I didn't have my own van. So, you know, it was good to have all that in place. I was like, go on, we'll go for it. Yeah, we managed to win the championship first try.
Just speaking about meeting people at the right time and sponsorship, are you able to put into words just what a difference that makes to you?
It's everything. Honestly, it's everything. So there's people out there who, without naming names, there's people out there who I know I have outperformed in the past, and there's people who have outperformed me. And depending on who you meet or who you've already got in your family or as a mate or whatever, those people are what make the difference, because I certainly can't afford to go doing all the racing completely by myself, unsupported. You know, like I said, I don't own a van, you know, so I make use of the college facilities where I can, where it benefits them, you know, and I've had people throw tyres at me. And like last year I did British Superbikes. I couldn't have dreamt of affording that by myself. And I got some fantastic sponsors last year that helped fund that. But it is all about right person, right time. And, you know, I've spent countless hours firing emails about ringing people, going knocking on businesses' doors, handing out race CVs and portfolios and stuff. And it very, very rarely comes back to anything. Whereas my bigger sponsors were stumbled across by accident. So I'd say I met Ben. I worked on his bike at Blackpool Honda, and I just got chatting, and he saw what I'd been doing racing C90s, doing endurance racing C90s. And when I told him the people who we were racing against, he was well impressed with the names, because, you know, they were British Superbike frontrunners, and I was beating them only on a C90, but it took his interest, and he was like, well, and I said I was going to stop racing because I couldn't afford it. And he said, no. I said, I'll, you know, right, if we're going to do something different, go and do something like Thunder Sport, I'll pay your entry. So I was like, oh, right, wow. Well, yeah, let's go. And it just kind of spiraled. But that was just by fluke. You know, I just met the guy through work. He put in more money than anybody ever had. And the same with last year. It was just through a friend who happened to want to give me a chance on a modern bike. So Alan wanted to give me a chance on a modern bike last year. And between us both, we stumbled across another friend, Joe. And anyway, before we knew it, like, oh, wow, there's enough money in here that we could actually, rather than go doing no limits on a used bike, let's just jump in with both feet to BSB with a new bike. And that's what we did. It's all about having the right people behind you, supporting you, but finding it is, a lot of it's just down to luck. It's the right place and the right time.
And I guess, though, just listening to you speak, having that infectious enthusiasm and talent goes some way as well.
I try to. You know, I try to be enthusiastic. I try to be positive about everything. It rubs off on students as well. You know, they quite regularly sort of, you know, if you come into a session and you're a bit boring and downhearted and stuff, it rubs off on them. But if you're a bit more sprightly and entertaining, I suppose, they listen to you more.
So then your dad, not so keen when he came over to do the Manx Grand Prix on road racing, certainly here in the Isle of Man. This is your plan, though, for 2024. Tell us how the thought process worked for thinking about TT this year.
So he was all excited when he went, because he was really good at Oliver's Mount. Few people said, oh, if you love it at Oliver's Mount, you'll love it at the Manx. So he was, oh, go on then, I'll go and do it. And he went to go and do it. And yeah, he was just underprepared. And there's just a few places where, like, I think he said it was Balaguerre on one of his first laps. He didn't know what the corner was. And he come at it flat out in top gear, come over a crest and just saw a wall. So then the panic just sets in of just, oh my God, what do I do? Where do I go? So just stamp on the brake. But as it turns out, it's a big, fast corner. Didn't like that feeling of the panic of not knowing where you're going and think, you know, he ended up on a curb somewhere. He just didn't like it. Whereas for me, I've done a lot of road riding, a lot more road riding than he ever had. And I know it's all about knowing where you're going. You can't go fast if you don't know where you're going. You've got to know what's over that route, what's behind that hedge that you can't see through. You know, you need to know where the road's going to go, where there's going to be a bump, where there's going to be a grid. You need to know where it is, and he didn't have a clue. Whereas I'm taking the learning more serious than anything, because I want to know, not necessarily so I can go fast, more so that I can be safe and I can enjoy it. The speed will come naturally. Well, in terms of entering, I kind of did it by accident, if I'm honest with you.
Not many people say that, Ryan. Whoops.
Well, I saw the entries had come out and I thought, oh, I'll have a nosy. And I'd been doing BSB, so I thought, you know, he said it'd be a nice challenge to step it up again next year. So it'd be a dream if we could get a TT entry. I was like, oh, that'd be absolutely mental. But I'll have a look to see what the requirements are, because I've never looked. I know about things like the mountain license and how, you know, you've got to have a certain number of signatures and whatnot. But I thought, I'll just have a look. And I went on the website and I already had an account on the TT website, because, you know, you sign up to the newsletters and so you can view the articles and what have you. And there was a bit where it said competitors' entries. Or so I clicked the entries and it said, which class would you like to enter? So I thought, right, well, at the time I was riding for Alan. I thought, there's a potential for a Super Sport. He's got a bike out there. So I'll click Super Sport. I thought, oh, I've got a Super Twin at the college. So we've got a Super Twin that we've built with students that's nearly finished. I thought, oh, I'll click Super Twin as well. I'll do Super Twin and Super Sport. Click next and it said entry submitted. I thought, oh, it was as easy. That was it. I was like, oh, right, okay. I've submitted an entry. And the next thing I knew, I got an email from Bruce Baker asking me for previous results. So I sent him all my results from the last 2 years. And then the next thing I knew, I had an email saying, yeah, I'd love you to come over for a weekend with Milky and Johnny Barton. I was like, this is ace. I was like, okay, yeah, so I'll go. Booked on the next ferry I could, went over and spent a weekend doing laps in my car. Did a lap with Milky, getting a load of advice, and a lap with Johnny doing the same. And then, yeah, just kept going around. I did a full tank of diesel, just going round and round and round. Loving it. Can't wait. Can't wait to get going.
And in terms of preparations, I mean, obviously the work is a full-time thing, and I know you can do some of your bike prep there, but how are you managing to balance everything that you've got to do at the moment while thinking, you know, the time is ticking away before you're sitting at the top of Bray Hill?
Yeah, honestly, that's the biggest struggle for me at the moment, is trying to balance everything. There's so much to do in such a short amount of time. I've not got a ride for BSB for this year, so I don't have the 600 that I had potentially as an idea, or because I say I put the entry in before I even knew what I was doing for this year. It was just I didn't think I'd get an entry sort of thing. But yeah, so at the moment I don't have a 600. It turns out the Super Twin we've got isn't new enough. It's a couple of years too old. So I've now got the issues there that I've got to sort out two bikes as well. So the actual plan of doing the TT, because of the timescale, might end up going on the back burner until next year, and I might end up having to enter the Manx instead. You know, I'd still be loving it to go and do it. It just loses a little bit of the buzz of what you're doing, doesn't it? But at the same time, it gives me a lot more time to prep. So if I can get things sorted in time for the TT, I'll be there for that. But if I can't, I'll go and do the Manx instead, because it just gives me an extra 3 months to get prepared, doesn't it? And to get myself the right funding and support, and get myself the bike sorted, and more time to learn the track. And because there's only so many weekends I can get over to learn the track, because obviously I can't just jump on a ferry tonight, for example, because I've got to be back at work first thing tomorrow morning. There's only so many times I can get over to go and do some laps and learn the track. So it's hard to get everything done in time.
What sort of things are you looking for, Ryan?
Ideally, I need two bikes. That's the main thing. I need a 600, I need a Super Twin. I'm trying to make it work. So I've got other bikes that I've got at home I've still got the pre-injection R6 that I raced a couple of years ago. So that's going to be going up for sale. I've got a 750 SRAD that I've built up, which is technically eligible for the Classic Manx, but I think that's a bit too big of a jump to go straight into as a newcomer myself. So I don't, you know, for the Classic Superbike. So that's up for sale. So I'm trying to sell a few things off to get some money. I know of two bikes that I want to get. There's a Z that I've been looking at in the Alaman, and there's a 600RR over here, but I just need to get the money in place to get them. And then I need to get myself a new helmet, because you've got to have an FIM helmet and you're not an ACE one. I need to get some different leathers, you know. So I've got a load of stuff in place, but yeah, I just need to get myself some support. Ideally, it'd be lovely, wouldn't it, if I could just find some rich old lady that wants to, you know, help a young lad out.
Yeah, I mean, or gentle. I'm sure you're not fussy at this point about who it is who's going to give you that sort of support.
No. I say, if they're going to put a bike under me, I don't care who it is.
Have you given yourself a deadline as to when you think, actually, do you know what, the TT this year is probably not a goer?
If I remember right off the top of my head, I don't think I even get to choose. I think the deadline from the TT organisers is you have to have everything submitted by the 31st of March. So again, it's a short window, isn't it, from now till then. So 3.5 weeks, and the 31st of March, I think, is the deadline to have all of your bikes and your teams and your sponsors' details submitted. I presume that's so they can start doing things like updating website or program or whatever. But yeah, it's in the regs. So 31st of March is the official deadline for the TT. So I'm still going to try my hardest to make it work by then. But, so yeah, if you know anybody, send them my way.
Well, you never know who's listening, Ryan. You never know. And if people want to sort of see the sort of things that you have been doing, do you keep up to date with social media and posting your results and things like that?
Yeah, I do my best too. So when I'm away on a weekend racing, I tend to be putting updates out throughout a weekend. I try and put bits on through the week. I'd love to be one of these people who gets stuff on social media multiple times a day. You know, it's all about interactions and stuff nowadays, isn't it? And so I've worked and I juggle everything, you know, kids and a family and a more than full-time job. I mean, I work two jobs. So I do me teaching throughout the week, which is never just 9 to 5. I'm regularly here till late at night trying to keep stuff up. And then on a weekend, I go delivering kebabs in my car just to put a bit of fuel in the tank or tyres on the bike or what have you.
And you mentioned kids. What do they think about what you're doing?
Jake, my oldest, he's 16. He doesn't really understand it. He's into football, but he sort of understands that it's a big thing, and he's sort of excited. Pally is 8. She has no interest in bikes whatsoever, so she doesn't care. As soon as I mentioned that we're going away for bike race, she's like, do I have to go? No, don't worry. And the youngest two are, Frankie's 2.5, and he's got no understanding of anything yet, really. He just loves watching the bikes. He stands at the side of the track, bouncing up and down, waving his hands around, screaming in excitement. So he'll just love being around anything motorbikes. And then Freddie's only 4 months old, so as long as he sees your face, he's happy.
My God, I am exhausted just hearing all of that. So you've got your job, you've got your preparations, you've got a very good egg. And is she into bikes at all?
No, before I met her, no, she had no interest, really. You know, it's never been in her sort of surroundings. She's never had any exposure to it. She wanted a moped when she was 16, that's about it. And then obviously, we met in 2017, would have been. We've both got a previous child from our previous, that's where Jake and Hannah come from. We were two together, one each from previous. No, she wasn't really interested, but she enjoyed it thoroughly from day one. And yeah, she's mega on board with it all. We had an agreement in place where, you know, we're always dead supportive of each other. So if there's anything you want to do, just go and do it, because you can't be here forever. Go and do it. If something you want to do, do it, because you'll always just regret not doing it. The only thing we'd both said that neither was allowed to do was I said that she's not allowed to have lip fillers. I'm not allowed to jump out of a plane without a parachute, which is what Travis Pastrana did. Travis Pastrana did, jumped out of a plane without a parachute and then got fastened into a tandem skydive. And I thought, oh, yes, you do. She said, right, you can't do that. When I told her that I'd entered for the TT, she said, no, I'm changing it. That's the thing you're not allowed to do. But yeah, so she wasn't best pleased about it.
Are you going to come home from the TT and her lips are going to be the size of... No. It'll be fine.
No, she, honestly, she's already said that, but that's it. I'm having my lips done.
So we know that you need to get a few things sorted, and fingers crossed that's going to be done by the end of March. Presumably, if anyone's listening, you'd be very, very welcome to hear from anyone. Have you got a team sorted to bring with you?
I've got a lot of people around me who are supporting, who have either already done the TT themselves or they've done the Manx or whatever. So Richie's really supporting me. So he's great. He's almost like my right hand man, and I'm his right hand man in terms of the going away racing, because obviously we work it through work. Students will be doing a lot of the prep, in the morning, evening wise, part of the experience, and we make sure they're trained up so they know what they're doing. But at the same time, if they tighten a nut and bolt, we check that nut and bolt. Got it, haven't you? They're still learning. And I've got a few people around me that say, so Pete Bleakley is a friend of mine. He's been helping me out with a bit, even just whether it's down to advice and telling you the stuff you need and what to expect. The stuff you won't expect to expect that you're going to need, simple things that people forget about, like when you're costing stuff up, a lot of people forget about things like getting the fireproof suits for the pits. And he said having a second fuel filler cap sat in your overalls ready so that when you took the fuel cap off, if you drop it and it goes in the fairings, you ain't getting it back out. You've no chance. Everything's red off. So you've got a spare one in your pocket ready to go on. And out you go. There was loads of little bits of advice and, people who are going to be there helping. So yeah, I'm quite well sorted for people around me. Yeah, I just need some wheels under me.
Small matter of the bikes. If anyone's listening, Ryan, and they think they can support you with any of the things that you're looking for, how do they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me through Facebook or Instagram. It's one of the easiest ways. If you just search for Ryan Garside on Facebook, you'll find pictures of some idiot doing wheelies and whatnot, and that'll be me. Yeah, so there's on Facebook or Instagram.
Hopefully somebody will be in touch, and we really look forward to hearing that you're going to be on that start line. If not, we will see you at the Manx Grand Prix. And just thinking about you said you're around a lot of people who maybe have done the TT before or the MGP. What would you say is the best piece of advice you've been given so far?
To enjoy it. Enjoying it. Just enjoy it rather than focusing too much on results or anything. And I can't even say particularly exactly who said what there, but there's been a lot of people that have sort of said you're going to love it. Just make sure you enjoy yourself. Just do your own thing, Yeah, I just want to go and just enjoy myself. And that is pretty much all. That's my target. Yeah, it's to go, enjoy it, come on.
We cannot wait to hear how you get on. Fingers crossed that you get everything you need. Keep in touch and let us know how you're doing.
I'll get it sorted. It's just a matter of time, isn't it, as to how quickly I can sort it, what month I end up lining up on the grid for, I suppose, really. I'll definitely be there doing it. I can't wait. There's nothing I want to do more at the moment.
Ryan Garside. And as I said, we have every single thing crossed that he can get everything organised for TT. But if not, we will see him at the MGP. Thank you again for listening to this podcast. And if you have a story that you'd like to tell, I'd love to hear from you. BethSB@manxradio.com is the email address, or you can find me through the podcast page at manxradio.com. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye. This Journey to a Dream podcast has been brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. Visit their website, kawasaki-insurance.co.uk, to find out how you can get covered.